Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Right, Francis, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. How many years has it been since we've known each other?
Oh, my God. It's got to be, well, more than 20, I would think, because I think we met when Lindsay and I were out practicing at in Los Gatos, and she was juggling, and you were working with your son on some goalkeeping things, and so it goes way back.
Yeah, I just remember. I don't even remember. Yeah, so Brad probably had just started. My friend Jan Nordmo was coaching a team, and I was too busy with college. I just couldn't coach a youth team anymore, and I had brought him to Jan, and Jan liked him. We were traveling out to Los Gatos, and I just remember looking over and seeing this girl juggle, and I remember commenting, wow, she's pretty good. And then you said, yeah, and she's a goalkeeper. And I said, oh, I just perked up. It's like, oh, that's cool. A goalkeeper that actually cares about footwork at such, what was she, 9, 10? I don't remember.
Yeah, that's about right. She, her team coach told her she needed to learn to juggle, and so she started to do it. And I think she got up to maybe 100 or something on one foot. And she was out juggling at some, I want to say maybe a tournament where there was a lot of people around. And some guy was walking by, probably a coach. And he said, you know, that's great. You can juggle that much with one foot. You really should be using 2 feet. And all you have to do is challenge Lindsay to do something. And then she will do it. And so she
like started. No kid I've ever coached before in my life. I've never seen anything like Lindsay in all my years.
Well, she ended up, once she went to 2 feet, she got to 100, then she got to 1,000. And one day in the backyard, she got to 8,000. So it was almost an hour and a half of juggling out there in the backyard. So yeah, it was crazy.
Crazy. And then you were saying, oh no, and she does the, what do they call it? The football, they call it punt passing kick. MLS, I don't know if they even do it anymore, but what do they call it?
They don't. Dribble, pass, and shoot.
Dribble, pass, and shoot. And you said, yeah, and she's competing with the boys and she's beating them.
Yeah, well, she made it to Nationals 2 years on that MLS was running that program. And one of the 2 years, she won at Nationals. So, yeah, she took that really seriously as well. She loved to work on all those skills. She was doing goalkeeping, but also, of course, on her younger teams, still playing forward or something like that. And so she was working on some of the kinds of skills that she would have needed to be a big target forward, her ability to turn, to hold the ball when passes were played to her, to be quicker on her dribbling and all those kinds of things when it finally became clear that she was going to end up being a goalkeeper. And then at that point, she, you know, moved her focus to more of the goalkeeper training. And that's about the time that we met you and you started to help her with the training.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I, you know, spent quite a few sessions out in Los Gatos when Brad was out there. And then at some point I just couldn't make the trip anymore, or Brad stopped. I don't remember how, but you guys were making the trip out to me at Cal State East Bay, which is, people that don't understand the Bay Area, you look at it on a map and you go, oh, it's not that far. It's a 30-minute drive. No, it's probably
an hour, two hours some days. It's an hour. And with traffic going home, depending on when it was, yeah, it could be an hour and a quarter or whatever. Yeah, it was a long way.
Yeah, but you guys used to come out, I mean, virtually every week for,
yeah,
I don't know, 11 or 12 all the way up to, even in college, she was still coming back to me in the summer occasionally, but she was pretty good for once a week that we were working. And just so people know the story, Maybe I'll jump to the end and then we'll talk about how we, well, we, then we go. But Lindsay ended up making the national team at what age is it? 14 was her
Yeah, I
first
would
national
say that,
team.
yeah, 13 to 14 that she moved up and got seen and got started to be called in. Yes.
And 15 and
Yeah,
16.
through about 16. At 16, she was still the number one goalkeeper and definitely the top three goalkeepers. But a new coach came in, and that coach said, "You're still one of our top goalkeepers, but we're going to call a few other people in because we just need to broaden the base of who we see." And she never got called back in again. They basically, I guess, had decided that their top three weren't what they were looking for, and so they started to find other players that played the position, and so that was sort of the end. So she was in that national team pool for a couple 3 years, and the assistant coach on that team, who was the main goalkeeper coach, kept in contact with Lindsay for a number of years, and I think that coach really liked Lindsay and would have kept her and would have kept working with her and developing her because she later tried to recruit her to a college. But the head coach had decided, for whatever reason, that Lindsay wasn't the one that he was looking for.
Yeah, and then and I want to come back to this whole story, but just so people know, she ended up at Stanford, and I've got a picture on my wall of her holding a national championship trophy that I'll tell the story of later because she didn't want to take that picture. But I asked Lynn, please, for me, tell her it's for me, and she did it.
Yeah.
So she made it to the highest levels in the nation, on a couple different levels. But I think what's so fascinating about her story is the ups and downs of it. You know, I mean, the first time, because I remember, because I think I was running the goalkeepers for the state of California when she made it into the state and then regional and then which I got her the national team. And I remember bowing out of the girls' side and just focused on the boys' side because I knew her and I didn't want to bias anybody getting her into the state team.
Right.
And they, you know, I remember coming back, how'd this girl do? How'd Lindsay Dickerson do? Oh, she's unbelievable. And
Yeah.
it easily made the state team. And then when I heard she made the national team, I was just so, and of course you're proud as a parent and I'm proud as a coach, but to see the hard work pay off, I think is what was so cool to me. Because I'll tell you a couple stories, Francis. I remember the first day we ever worked, she could bang a ball with her right foot at an early age. I mean, she could smash a ball. She
Right.
was really good. She could knock a ball 12, 13 years old to midfield from her right foot off a goal kick, no problem. And she could hit targets. I mean, would hit targets. But I remember my son coming up with an injury. Brad is, I don't know, 5 years or so ahead of Lindsay, 4 years, something like that. And he
Right.
came up with an injury in high school with his right leg. And I thought, oh, yeah, we probably should work more on left foot. And, you know, I don't know why this is just dawning on me, but you know, I challenged Lindsay to bang a ball with her left foot. It's like, can you hit a pass? And I remember working out there. She couldn't hit a ball 10 yards to me with her left foot. Not, she couldn't. She was terrible.
Yeah,
And
right.
a week later came back and she was 25 yards to me. It's like,
Yeah.
holy smokes, how much time did you spend on that this week? And within a month, she could bang a ball to midfield with her left foot. She could hit it. It
Yeah.
wasn't quite as good, of course. We're never all totally equal, but she put in the work in every aspect. And one of the few kids that I ever coached where if you gave her a challenge 1 week, which is the way I like to do lessons, it's like, okay, we worked on this week. Here's your challenge next week. This is what I want to work on the building blocks, but I need you to do this for me. Go to the wall, do this, do that, whatever it was I gave them. And she would come back, you know, better than I would have expected, which allowed me to build the building blocks faster. It allowed me to move on quicker with her.
Right.
What
She was,
do you think that
go
work
ahead.
ethic came from?
Internal, definitely internal. When she was really little, She's got a brother who's 3 years older than her. So her brother was the first one to get into soccer, and he went out to one of those, soccer for kids things where they all, they call it buzz ball, right? That this whole hive of boys chase a ball around on the field, and they have no idea how the game of soccer goes. They just know they want to pursue that ball. So he was ahead of her in that. And when she got to age 3 or age 4, we allowed her to do that as well, put her into one of those programs. But she wasn't that much into soccer at that point. She didn't care that much. And then her brother went to a tournament as an under 10, and it wasn't even a class 1 tournament, it was class 3. But the team did well enough that I think they got, I don't know if they won it or they got second place. They got some trophies or some medals or something. And we had gone to that as a family. Lindsay saw that and said, okay, I want to do that. And so that's how she got into soccer. So at like age 6 or age 7, that was her when she decided that she wanted to start playing soccer. So we signed her up for a team, and Saturday morning would roll around. She would have a game at like 11 a.m. She would be out of bed at 6:15 in the morning, coming into our room saying, "Soccer today. Oh boy, soccer today." And we're going, "Yeah, it's 5 hours before we go out." "Yeah, but the game's going to happen today." So this was not at all us as parents saying, "You need to play. You need to focus on this. You need to work hard." It was totally internal. And then the second half of that story is, so now she's playing, she's scoring goals from all over the field on those little goals that you do when you play at under 8. She'd play forward, score a couple of goals, they'd pull her out of the game because you can't, it's rec. And then they'd put her back in, and now she's at fullback, and she'd hit a ball 40 yards into one of those goals and score. And so now they're going, "Now you have to come out." And she would also come out with a red face because she was not as big a runner as her older brother. And so she says to me one day, "Dad, why don't they play me more?" And I said, "Well, they look at you when you come off the field and they think you're not quite in shape, even though you are. They think you aren't because of the way your face looks." And she says, "Well, what do I have to do to get into shape?" And I said, "Well, unfortunately, you'll have to run." And she went, "Okay, let's set up a program for running." And so I'm out on the bike. We're going a third of a mile or a quarter of a mile in the neighborhood with this 7-year-old who wants to go out and start running. So again, with Lindsay, it was never one where we had to say, "You need to get out and work. You need to get ready." Our son transitioning from baseball to soccer would be, "Hey, soccer's going to start in 3 weeks. You need to start doing some running to get ready." Yeah, I'll get to that. But with Lindsay, it was always self-motivated. She just is internal in terms of those kinds of things.
Yeah, I often talk about that, and I just can't get, especially younger parents, hard to get them to understand that people have an engine, that there's engines we are born with, and it is this internal engine, and some have it and some don't. It can be developed to some extent, and certainly, human beings just like to do the things that they like to do, and they spend more time doing the things that they enjoy, that they really like, that they really dig and are into. That's what they spend more time doing, and it just you can't force it. You can't make it happen. You can't. You just can't.
Right.
And she just has that engine. And it's obviously, we'll get to the end of the story, but and people want to understand how driven this young woman is. But she's always had it, and whatever she did, she just that's the way she was. And if she decided something was going to happen, then she'd make that thing happen with no excuses and no acceptance for no. And I just can't get parents to understand sometimes that as much as they want this for their kids, if your kid doesn't want it, this is not happening.
Yeah. And interestingly, because of what I shared about our son and trying to get him to transition from baseball to soccer. And maybe we'll get to this later in the conversation. But today, he's very involved and he is very self-motivated and very driven. And he does all the training and all the preparation that he needs to do in his job as a referee. And
Yeah,
so,
we're gonna get to Joe in a minute too,
yeah.
because I it's it, I, you know, fortunately I got to know him from the time he was, I guess, 13 or 14, and
Right.
kind of watched him develop. And he used to come to training sessions, and sometimes he'd help me. I'd put him to work
Yeah.
with Lindsay, and I
Yeah.
got to follow his career, which is fascinating to me too. What kind of a human being he is too, and
Yeah.
what an amazing young man he is. And I want parents to hear this. Because the moral of the story here is that I want parents to understand is that, you know, if your kids are into something, and if you support them in the right way, they can accomplish amazing things, but you can't push them. You just can't.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Francis, I remember, so Lindsay was probably 13, 14, 13 or 14, probably made the national team for the first time. And I remember, well, first of all, I remember the first couple of sessions you were shagging balls for me as I would, you know, miss the goal or whatever. And I
Right.
said, don't do that. We'll do that. We need the downtime. Go sit down over there. So
Right.
probably the first ch time I ever chastised you. And I would do this to many parents. It wasn't just you. It was a common thing. And then I remember one time hearing you talk to Lindsay, and in front of me or with me, or we were talking about something, or maybe I was talking to Lindsay about something and she mentioned something, and you were, Lindsay, you need to be doing this more, and you need to be doing that more. And it was just came off to me as an outsider as a little bit harsh. Not in a bad way. It wasn't swearing at her or yelling at her, but it was just like little harsh. And while you were saying this thing, you were carrying her bag for her. Do you remember this conversation? I said, Francis, you have it in reverse.
Yeah, I
You
don't.
should make her carry her bag, which is hard on her, and then be easy with her with the soccer, because it's really, she's got this. We've got this. She's got this.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I don't remember the specific conversation. I do know that I was very involved in sort of being that parent slash coach, even though I don't have a background in coaching when she was younger. And I do know that most of our conversations, I would just tell her things that she had done well because mostly she was doing things the way they needed to be done. And because she was doing so few things that could have been done better, I did talk about those, and it could very well have gotten to the point to where Lindsay would think, he's taking all the good things I do for granted, and he's only telling me about the things that are bad. And getting away from that positive coaching alliance, five good things for every one negative thing that you do.
Right.
I also know that at a certain point up there when we were training in Hayward, that you said it's probably better for you not to be around at all during training and just let me work with her and let me watch her and tell her things and work with her. And then when you get in the car going home, you won't have seen anything. So there won't be anything that you can say, you could have done this better, or gee, you did that really well. It'll just be you helping to bring your daughter up to training and helping to bring her home. And I was totally okay with that. And after that, at sessions, I was down on the track, walking around, doing
Right.
like while you guys worked. And so, yeah, I mean, I completely understood that at that point I would need to get out of it. And I do know that when she made the state team in ODP, before she made the national level, that was another person who was involved in that program. So it wasn't you, said to me, you can't be tying her shoes anymore. You can't be carrying her bag anymore. We need to see that she's independent. And I'd always tied her shoes because she had her goalkeeper gloves on. But it's
Right.
like she would just have to find a defender or somebody to help tie her shoes so that dad wasn't involved. And so California or Cal North did a great job of reaching out to the parents when these training sessions started and saying, you stand way over there and you can maybe watch your daughter across the field, but you're not getting anywhere near your daughter as she's doing these tryouts.
And Francis, I use your example quite a bit when I talk to parents because parents, we talk about kids being coachable, but so many times the kids are coachable. They're just fine, but the parents aren't coachable. So the parents go home and undo everything that the coach has done by their conversations about how unfair it is and how that kid gets to play and I don't understand. And
Right.
even if you're not Even if it's two parents talking to each other, what you think the kid's not listening? You think the
Yeah.
kid's not picking up on this? And
Right.
I often use you as that example in that one story, and I didn't remember the second story about telling you not even to be around. But you're coachable, and I think that that's part of your kid's success and the levels that they achieved and with Joe are still achieving, is because you as a parent are coachable, and I just think. We as human beings have to be open to constructive criticism and considering the information that's being given to us and understand that it's coming from an expert. I'm not that expert. I probably should listen. Let's see how this goes.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I quickly evolved away from an assistant coach on Lindsay's team because I never had that capability. I was the assistant coach who the head coach says, go set up these cones over there. You know, that's how much coaching I did. But I quickly became the team manager. And so my job was to handle the paperwork and get us into tournaments and take care of the passes and things like that. So I was around teams a lot. And I became kind of a lightning rod for some of the red hot parents on Lindsay's team because almost everybody on that team expected their kid to play in college. And they would be reaching out to me, like you were just talking about, saying, why is my kid not starting? She only got 20 minutes in the last game. And why did this player get 30 minutes and my daughter only got 20? And all that stuff. They were afraid to talk to the head coach about it, but they had no problem talking to the manager. And one of the things that came up is they went, well, you don't understand any of this because your daughter starts and plays the whole game and plays all the time. She's a star, so you don't get it. And then I would say, well, you don't know what happens on our son's team where he plays for 5 or 10 minutes. He scores the game-winning goal and immediately gets pulled because they want to put the starter back in and so on and so on. And so I actually, because our two kids at the youth level had such different playing levels, I did understand how parents feel and how, yeah, we'd like our son Joe to be starting and playing 100% of the time too, but we have to understand that the coaches are making a different decision about him and that we can't be those parents in the background, complaining to other parents or talking about our kids in negative ways and with the kids around to overhear. So yeah, I mean, definitely from that standpoint, I appreciate that. And the other related story is that you talk about training parents. I got into refereeing at the same time as our son did, and I refereed for quite some time. I never got up to the college level, but I refereed some of the top games at the high school level before I got too old to do that. It was always worse if I'm, you know, reffing a U18 boys game, a top level boys game, and then I'm going to go referee a U10 boys game. The parents at the U10 boys games were much worse than the U18 boys because they hadn't been trained yet and they didn't understand how to be good parents and just be supportive on the sidelines and not be yelling at their kids. Or coaching them when the coach is saying something to their boys on one side, the parents are giving them the exact opposite directions on the other. And
Right.
so they just haven't figured out yet how to be good, supportive parents, enjoying their kids playing this great game and not trying to micromanage everything that's going on in the field.
Yeah, it just that's one of the things that I want parents to hear this. I really any Mostly parents listen to this to these podcasts, from what I understand, as they reach out to us. But you have to be introspective and on what your input is to the kids, what you're saying, and what your attitude is. And I truly believe it has so much to do with your kids' development. Even me, I mean, look, there's a reason why I stepped away when my son was 14. I said, I'm not coaching you anymore. I
Right.
think it's best if you have somebody else to be hard on you and, or not
Yeah.
hard on you or whatever
Yeah.
the experience is, but you're
Right.
going to have other coaches in your life and you better learn to deal with it. And I just can't coach you anymore. And not that I didn't do, private goalkeeper sessions with him because I didn't know anybody else that I trusted, but not as a coach. And I just think parents need to be super self-aware about how they come across to other people, even that affects their kids. And I think you guys did a really good job. Lynn was very hands-off. You were
Yep.
usually around more, but there were times when you were on. You guys did a good job as a family when you were on business trips and you were out of town, and then Lynn would bring Lindsay to practice and take care of her and all of those things. So
Exactly. Yep.
do you there was a phase, another story that comes to mind that I talk about quite often. I talk about sacrifice and what it takes. 'Cause I remember having this conversation with Lindsay, and I had with almost every kid. I had a number of kids who made either the national team or the national pool. One of them, Allie Kirshner, you introduced me to, did really well, played at
Right.
Duke. But I had some other kids too, Bianca DeLuce, and I remember telling the kids that, oh, I made the state team, I made the regional team, I made it, and I said, yeah, you haven't done anything yet. It's
Yeah.
really, how many years can you stay there?
Yeah.
And then can you be a starter? And then can you make the full national team? And then, can you win a World Cup? It's like there's always something more, and there's sacrifices that it takes to get there.
Right.
And I remember Lindsay coming to me. It had to be in high school, so it had to be like maybe 16. And she was upset. It was probably the Costa Rica trip, where the national team went down to play in Costa Rica. And she was a little bummed in that session. And afterwards we were done. I said, what's going on? What's up? And she said, well, I'm going to be missing, I don't know what it was, prom or homecoming or something. She was going to be missing. And she goes, it's kind of a bummer missing these things. And I said, you don't have to do this. I said, your parents would understand if you said, this is too much and I'm missing life. And she said, no, it's not that. I want to do this. I want to go. I really do. It's me. I want to go, but it is a bummer having to sacrifice
Yep.
these other things in life. Do you remember that phase that she was going through?
There was definitely some of that in her life, in a variety of ways, and not
Yeah,
just in.
and or how did she deal with, how did you guys
Yeah.
deal with that as a family?
Again, because Lindsay was such a self-starter, and because this was all internal, other than giving her sort of the love and support that you do as a parent, and telling her that we understand and telling her that it's okay. She definitely made many sacrifices to achieve what she wanted to achieve. As I said, so we've been talking all about soccer, but in high school, she worked super hard to get as close to straight A's as she could get. And I mean, her GPA was very, very high, and she took a lot of AP classes and honors classes and all that stuff. And so it meant we would go to practice, she and I. We would come home. She would go, "What time is dinner, Mom?" And she would get the word, and she'd go, "I'm heading down to study." And she'd go down and close her door, and she'd be in her room for an hour and a half. And then it was dinner. And then she would come in and have dinner and back down to her room and close her door and work until, 11 o'clock, and then to bed, and then get up and do it all the next day. And there were certainly moments when we felt like, looking at her, we mainly saw a frown on her face. And it's just because it was such a grind. But it
Yeah.
wasn't a grind because we said, you need perfect grades if you're going to get into Stanford or Duke or UCLA or wherever you want to go. She wanted to do that. And so she knew that she was sacrificing coming home and kicking back and relaxing on the couch and watching a show on TV because she had these goals that she wanted to achieve. So soccer was the same thing, that she knew that there was all this hard work, and she knew that she was bummed when the national team stopped calling her, even though that meant she had fewer conflicts because it meant she hadn't achieved something that she wanted to achieve. I do remember, though, one time when she came to us, this was before, just before she went to Stanford, I think, and she said, "Dad, I just want to let you know I have no interest in the women's national team." And and I said, "Oh, okay, just why?" And she said, "I do not want to go up to the women's national team like, oh gosh, now I'm blanking on the name of the goalkeeper, Barnett. There's a Stanford goalkeeper was the backup to Hope Solo. And she was the backup to Hope Solo for 10, 11, 12 years. So she's on the team. She's playing like one game a year or two games a year. And finally, professional league started up, so at least she could play year round as a pro rather than just practice and sit and practice and sit. But she had made a decision. I want to go to Stanford. I want to be a starter all 4 years there. I want to win national championships. But when I'm done there, I've got a life that I want to live." Nicole Barnhart is the player that I'm
That's
trying to.
right. That's right.
So she definitely knew there were sacrifices, but there would be points where she would make a judgment and go, "I'm not going to sacrifice past that." And her goal in life, as you know, was to be a doctor. And so it was not to try to be the national team starter. I think even if people had said, "But you're going to be a starter on the national team," she might have said, "Yep, I don't care. I want to be a doctor," because she might have said, "This is how far I want to go in soccer, is to get to college and play in college, and then after that, I've got other things I want to do."
Yeah, I remember the first question I ask every kid, and even at 10 years old, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? What are your goals? And at 10 years old, she said, "I want to play at Stanford." It's like, oh, okay. Thinking in my own head, yeah. But you were a Stanford alum, right? And your wife, you guys are a Stanford family. Your Lynn is a
Correct.
Stanford alum, and so that's where she got that in her head, I'm sure. Then I don't know, two or three sessions in, I pulled out something. I just wanted to test her fortitude. Really had not much to do with goalkeeping, and I had these bars that I would nickname the bars of death, and I would have it was a balancing. She was jumping over them and making saves and doing things, and it wasn't really goalkeeper specific. As I said, it was a test of just to see where she was at with her fortitude, and she started to cry. Because it was hard. And I said, "Why are you crying?" She goes, "It's so hard." And I said, "We could make this easier, and you could lower your expectations to Cal, knowing this Cal Stanford rivalry." And it made me laugh. I don't know how funny it was, but it made me laugh internally. And she's like, "No, I'm good. I can do this." She knew what she wanted. Really, I mean, I don't know how many people in life, how many kids in life know at 10 years old what they want to do, and it's really what they want to do, not just saying it. Maybe I've met two people ever in the tens of thousands of kids who knew. I always say, even at 15, 16, Francis, I tell kids that I talk to when I'm talking about helping them find a college, I'm going to ask you the dumbest question anybody's ever asked you. You're 16 years old. What do you want to do for the rest of your life? It's like such a stupid question we put on kids going into college. What do you want to do? But she knew, and she was one of these kids. I've got another client who wanted to send rockets in space for her whole life, and now she's at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical, and that's what she's going to do. But not many kids are like that. But she did. She how when did she know she wanted to be a doctor? Where did that come from?
That actually also was sometime in high school because up until that point, she had been a fabulous writer. And as you know, that's what I do for my career, that I've been a writer throughout my career. And so I think there had always sort of been an assumption that she would be a writer of some sort because she was just so good at it. She gave a valedictorian speech in for eighth grade, and she wrote it herself and wouldn't even show it to us until she had actually given it because she didn't want anybody to say, "Oh, your dad helped you with that speech." And
Right.
so on. She, would enter one of those contests that the, local Kiwanis Club did or something, write something about, how to not use drugs or whatever. And so she would enter those and write those things. So the assumption had sort of been that she'd be a writer, but I think it was maybe sophomore year in high school that she came to me and said, "Dad, I hope you're not going to be disappointed. But I've decided I don't want to be a writer. I want to be a doctor." And, as parents, what are you going to say? "Oh, yeah, we're really disappointed that you're saying I want to be a doctor and save people's lives." So, yeah, no, we were supportive of her in whatever that she would want to do. And her saying, "I want to be a doctor," was exciting. And then, and once she set her mind on that, then there was going to be no changing that as well.
Yeah, pretty wild that a kid knows that early exactly what they want to do and how driven they are to make that happen. And then wanted to get into Stanford and then got into Stanford and wanted to play at Stanford. So I know she had quite a few offers from other schools. She was a fairly highly recruited player. Do you remember some of the other schools? I remember Santa Clara. Remember
Yes.
Berkeley? Remember some of the other schools that recruited her?
Yeah, Santa Clara and Cal both recruited her. Santa Clara, I think she would have played more. I think she would have they would have redshirted her because they also had another local goalkeeper, Bianca Henninger, was there and was only 1 year ahead of Lindsay. So I think they would have redshirted her. Lindsay would have been backup for 2 years and then would have been a starter for 2 years at Santa Clara. Cal was very excited about her, but of course, I know that the Cal coach, like many coaches, would go, "Yeah, you're going to be a starter, and then it depends on what you show once you get on campus." So I don't think there were guarantees there. I think Santa Clara would have really followed through and probably given her 2 years. But she was, we went down and visited UCLA. So, and this was when the national team coach, she became the national team coach. And now I'm blanking on her name too. Led the US to a World Cup, and she's English. Anyway.
Yes, I don't know why. Tracy,
Yeah.
no. Okay.
I might think
Two
of a
old
player.
men, two old men whose memory is failing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, we met her. She was unbelievably impressive in the half hour we had to chat with her in her office. Really, really, really great coach.
Ellis.
Yes,
Jill Ellis.
Jill Ellis. Yes. So we met her. She was great. Lindsay did go back to Duke and really, really was impressed with Duke's program. And then when she had already kind of decided that Stanford was her way, and by the way, when she picked Stanford, she told me her freshman year to stop talking about Stanford as a program. Said, "If you keep telling me how great Stanford is and why I should pick Stanford, I'm going to pick somewhere else." And so we stopped promoting Stanford and said, "Yeah, you just pick whatever you want." But once she had kind of gone through some of these sessions and was now strongly leaning towards Stanford, Notre Dame called her. And he said, "I've got a couple of goalkeepers here and I'm not happy with them. And so we're looking to, can we possibly sway you away from Stanford and have you pick us?" So yes, I think on in the end, when we tracked it, she had like 30 or 35 colleges that were interested because of her national team experience. So she had a lot of choices.
Yeah, and it's funny because the other conversation that comes up with parents and kids, of course, things are different now because ECNL wasn't a thing back in the day. But you did have down the road from you Pleasanton Rage, which was in her age group the number one team in the country. So Philippe Blin was the coach, was the coach of that team, but was also the who was the former San Jose State women's coach, and he was club director for that club for forever, 20 something years. And I remember Lindsay coming up to me one day and saying, and Lindsay, by the way, for people listening, wasn't on a high level team at all. That they were okay, but they weren't nearly of that caliber. And I remember her coming to me one day saying, Philippe wants me to come out there to play for them. And I said, well, I bet he does. You're the best goalkeeper in the country, and I bet he does. And I said, but why do you want to do it? Well, they're the best team in the country. And I said, yeah, but you already sacrifice a lot. Think about that. You're going to be talking about an additional 2.5 to 3 hours a week out of your day, less time to study and less time for family and whatever. And I know it's already hard on you. And by the way, you're already on the national team. It's not like anybody doesn't know who you are in college. They know who you are. You're on the national team. You don't need to make this unless this is what you want to do, but it's not necessary. And do you remember that whole thing going down when they made that offer to her and you guys were having that discussion?
Yes, I remember that discussion. She also got an offer from a team that was 1 year older than her, led by Albertine Montoya,
Oh, yes, that was an outstanding team.
the MVLA Mercury. And
Yeah.
in the end, the Pleasanton thing was kind of easy because, yes, the drive over and back would have been horrifying to try to do. And she had already done that as a kid. We played across Santa Clara Valley from where she played on the De Anza Force in Cupertino, which was like 10 minutes away from our house. So she had already, as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, had the experience of playing across the valley and doing your homework in the car, driving there and driving back, even at that early age. So the idea of being in high school and driving an hour and a half to Pleasanton and an hour and a half back from Pleasanton twice a week or whatever would have been terrible. And I think she, after talking to you, quickly rejected that. The MVLA one was harder because we knew it was a great team and we knew of Albertine as a great coach. And I've gotten to know Albertine even better over the years, and as a referee and so forth. And now his daughter plays at Stanford, and I see him at Stanford games when we go there. There, she finally decided, I don't want to leave my friends on my team, because her team wasn't bad. It was top four in the state, but we could
Right.
never get past Pleasanton and Mustang up in Danville. So it wasn't a bad team. And in a way, the fact that we weren't the best meant for the goalkeeper, there's more to do.
Absolutely.
If she'd gone to the MVLA Mercury, they were such a good team. The goalkeeper didn't have as much to do on that team because the rest of the team was so good. So Lindsay said, okay, I'll stay here. I want to be part of this team. And that way I don't have to leave my friends. And that's how she made that decision.
Yeah, my coaching friends that are listening to this will remember that Mercury team because I want to say every single kid went D1. It was close. It was a crazy talented team.
Yeah, well, they had Lindsay Taylor was on the team, and she was the third of the three Hermann Trophy winners in a row at Stanford with Kelly O'Hara, Kristen Press, and then Lindsay Taylor. So yeah, I mean, there were and Teresa Noyola was on that team,
That's
and
right.
both of those players played at Stanford. So yeah, that was a really, really good team.
Yeah, and I love that story that she didn't do it because I think that parents have to understand how important it is whether their kids if they have a good relationship with the team and the coach, and if they are developing that you play with your friends, man. It's so important to play with kids that you like, with coaches that you like. This all goes too quickly. And I think just there's so many parents and players out there that get wrapped up of wanting something better, right?
Yep.
Something bigger, something better. And it's, I think, part of it's human nature. I mean, look what we do with iPhones. We got to have the iPhone 16, then you got to have the 17. And when the 18 comes out, well, you got to have that. I mean, it's just part of human nature to
Yeah.
always want something bigger, faster, shinier, better.
Yeah.
And, but I think it can be a detriment to development within players as far as developing who they are as people and allowing them to have good memories and good relationships that carry forward.
Well, I think Lindsay would tell you her two best experiences as an athlete were 4 years of high school at St. Francis High School because she was playing with her high school friends. And so it wasn't as intense a competitive environment as the youth program or trying to be on the national team. And then, believe it or not, her seventh and eighth grade basketball team because she got to do a sport where there were no expectations and there was nobody saying you need to be seen, you need to be recruited. She just got to play and score baskets. And so she just had such a fabulous time being a basketball player because she was just doing it for the love of the game, which is what you're getting at, is that parents need to understand that their kids need to be doing this because they love the game and they're with their friends and they're out being active, and that's all about being a kid before you grow up.
Yeah, it's so important, so important. I one of the things I wanted to talk to you about too, we'll wrap up Lindsay here. By the way, you gotta I know she's busy. I don't bug her. She said she'd do it a while ago, but you gotta get her on, get talk to her and tell her give Dawn an hour on the podcast. I
All
want people to
right.
hear some of these stories now from her perspective. So we'll bring her on. But she ended up, to summarize, national team. And then under 17s dropped, and then made it to Stanford and got some playing time, got to play. She was always the number two though, right?
That's right. That's
And
right.
she and consistently the number two. She never dropped to three. I remember her getting minutes. They would get ahead, and she'd get a few minutes here, and they kind of tried their best to keep her sharpish, like at least she won't be too nervous when she goes in if we need her. But she had some rough go. She was back up to one goalkeeper for 2 years and then another goalkeeper for 2 years, I believe.
Yeah, it
And
was back up to one who was a junior when she was a freshman, and then became a backup to a younger goalkeeper, which made it very clear, writing on the wall, that she wasn't going to be going past that goalkeeper. Yeah.
And the first goalkeeper, I wasn't sure that that was, I wasn't impressed
Yeah,
overly at all.
yeah.
She couldn't kick a ball to save her life. But the second one was very good. She was
Very
very good.
good. Very, very good.
Very good.
Yeah.
And not that the first one was a slouch, but I remember thinking, really? Okay. And I never know how much of my bias as a coach though, and loving Lindsay and wanting the best for her. I never, and she was young. I get that. But how was that as a parent handling, oh, my kids made it, and with all these expectations, and then have it kind of fall apart
Yeah, that's really
ish.
hard. Yeah, that's that was very hard. And as I said, even harder on my wife than it was on me. But definitely a big disappointment. Both of us wishing that there was some magical way to change the circumstances. When the younger goalkeeper started ahead of Lindsay 4 or 5 games into Lindsay's sophomore year, we did talk to Lindsay and say, and this is, of course, before today, before the transfer window, before NIL, before everything else that's going on, where today Lindsay would have been a commodity. people would have said, this is a former national team goalkeeper who was good enough to get recruited to Stanford. And we think she's got a lot of ability. Yeah, let's take her in the transfer portal, and yeah, we'll play her here. And Lindsay would have been able to find a spot. But I mean, even then, she could have done it. She would have had to transfer outside the Pac-12 if she didn't want to lose a year of eligibility. And so we said to Lindsay, I said, do you need my help looking around? Is this anything that you want to do? And she said, no. And the reason, again, came back to two things. One, this was the school she wanted to be at. I mean,
Right.
certainly there were other schools like Duke that would have given her as good an education. But she was totally committed by that time to Stanford. And then she was recruited with a group of 10, total group of 10 players. So she had nine super close friends that they had all gone through their freshman year together. And there's no way that she wanted to leave those nine players. And so she very quickly said, where would I go? Where's a better combination of academics and athletics than Stanford? I'll just stay here and I will try to keep competing. And I definitely couldn't say. And so from that point on, everything was okay because she was a very frustrated athlete for the rest of her playing career there because she never, like you saw when she was younger, if she couldn't do something, she figured if I just work harder, I can get there. And in this case, she just couldn't because the head coach at Stanford is pretty much I play one goalkeeper kind of coach. And so she didn't get much playing time, which would then affect her confidence. And as you know, goalkeepers play based on how confident they are. And so even though they developed her by letting her practice and giving her some playing time, they definitely took away her confidence. And that made her, I would argue, not as good a goalkeeper when she got the opportunity to play because she wasn't confident out there on the field. And I think Stanford, in hindsight, would have been better served playing both goalkeepers a little bit more and then narrowing it down, the big games, the A goalkeeper plays, postseason, the A goalkeeper plays. But it's a choice, and the coach made the choice, and you can't fault the choice. That goalkeeper that played ahead of Lindsay was really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, and it's you can't argue with the goalkeeper with the coach that's won multiple national championships either. So
Exactly. Exactly.
what are you gonna say? Now I remember the picture I've got on my wall of her. They won and I said I would love a picture and her and I remember Lynn saying she doesn't feel like she's been part of the team's success. And she doesn't want to take a picture with the trophy. And I told Lynn, I said, A, please for me. But B, I don't know if I said this to Lynn or not, but I've said this to many people about kids. I've always said that a good teammate, the only question they should ever ask is, what can I do to make this team better? Because it is a
Right.
team sport. And if you don't
Right.
like that, then pick up golf or
Yeah.
swimming or
Right.
tennis or any other
Right.
individual sport or track. If you don't like that answer, because in a team sport, that's the only answer that matters. It's Rudy, right? It's
Right.
Rudy in Notre Dame. It's that story. It's the idea that whatever needs to be done, if I need to line, if me cleaning the toilets makes the team win more games, then that's what I'll do, if that's the only
Yeah.
job I had. And
Yeah.
Lindsay, the backup goalkeeper, which means you're always pushing the number one, which means you're supporting that goalkeeper, but also you're stopping shots.
Yep.
Your own teammates constantly to make them have to figure out how to score goals against the better goalkeepers in the country is helping your team win a national title. And you've got every right to take a picture with that trophy. You absolutely helped your team win that thing. Without you, maybe it doesn't happen. I don't know. Maybe it does, but you helped. You were part of it. And I think getting to see all of her teammates at her wedding, a while back, I was gonna say, what is it? 2 months ago? God, time goes fly
Yeah,
fast.
almost. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and seeing the support and her teammates taking pictures together with each other, All of that makes the team better and makes them
Yes.
fight for each other in those difficult situations. So yes, doggone it, you had the right to take that picture with the trophy. You are part of the team and you are making the team better. Just such an important lesson for players, because these days, Francis, these kids are a freshman. They don't get to start. I'm leaving. I'm out of
Yes,
here.
I know. And
It kills me.
I am so glad that Lindsay didn't have to deal with that, or that we didn't have to deal with it, because, a couple thousand players in the transfer portal, and it's so hard. I mean, I definitely understand why we got here. And I understand, if you look at football or whatever, that colleges made tens of millions of dollars off football, and the players are going, "I work really hard and you give me practically nothing. You pay
Right.
for my tuition, but you're making $50 million." So I understand it, and it is good for the players to have more freedom, for a coach not to be able to say, "Look, if you don't do exactly what I say, I will block you. And if you transfer, you'll lose a whole year of eligibility, and I can
Right.
really punish you to do this." That's kind of slave labor. But the environment that we're in today, where essentially the coaches recruit a class, and maybe they think, "I've got three players ready to go right now, and I've got three other players that if I develop them and they develop the way I think they will, they'll really be contributors junior and senior year." And it's like, yeah, but they'll be at Connecticut, Texas Tech, and wherever, because they're not going to be here anymore. They're going to be gone. It's such a hard environment for coaches to figure this all out, because this whole 4 years of development, and by the time they're a junior or senior, they'll be contributing, just doesn't happen anymore, or it's hard to make happen to bring the team together and keep the team together and not lose players who go, "Well, I guess I'm the number three center midfielder, so I'm gone." So yeah, it's really hard.
There's a coach that you and I both know and has been extremely successful in Division One women's soccer. I won't say his name, but we both know him. But he said that, and it wasn't Stanford. He said that the first question players are asking, top players, are, how much playing time will you guarantee me and how much money will you give me?
No, I can believe it.
What?
Yeah, I can believe
What?
it, that's what the deal is now. And like I
Yeah.
said, the far side of the coin wasn't right either, because, for example, one of those coaches that I've mentioned in the conversation today, who would have said, "Come here and I see you as a starter," at least one of those coaches is the kind of coach that, if Lindsay had picked that and had gone in, and then he kind of one day went, "Nope, I don't like her," then it would have been, "But you said I was going to be a starter, and that's why I picked coming here."
Right,
And
right,
so that isn't okay either. But
right.
yes, sort of player side of, I'm a free agent, and you offer me a guaranteed $72 million 5-year contract
Right,
in the
right.
pros. It's just such a different world today in college than it was when Lindsay was around.
Yeah, absolutely wild. And to wrap up the story, Lindsay is yeah, went from Stanford to Johns Hopkins to University of Washington, and now is going to, you'll have to remind me.
MD Anderson in Houston, where she'll do her fellowship in surgery. Yes.
Which is one of the top cancer
Yep.
surgery.
Yeah, she's a general surgeon, but has been mainly specializing in surgical oncology. Yes. Yeah.
Right on. So when you and I get sick, we know who to go to.
That's it. Well, all those goalkeeper hands, all that strength that she's got in her hands, from all those years of goalkeeping, come in handy in the surgical suite.
Well, so we don't just focus on the women's side. There's you've got a very interesting story in Joe. I remember your son Joe. Yeah, he wasn't a very good soccer player. Frankly, he just wasn't. I remember, trying to get him to hit balls for me. And there were times I'd say, "Yeah, I'll just hit these," because
Yeah.
he wasn't super. He wasn't great,
Correct.
but such a good kid, such a good kid. And the first time I realized Joe was different, actually, when he was at UC Davis. And he was rowing for Davis.
That's right.
And I said, "Oh, that's brutal." Because anybody who's ever sat at a row machine in the gym realizes that's one of the hardest sports there is. That's really hard. And that's when I knew, oh, Joe's different. And to walk us through just real quickly how Joe kind of shifted along to where he is now. Because when people hear where he is now, I mean, we could be seeing Joe theoretically in the World Cup. I don't know if they've made those decisions yet. I don't think they have, but he's very high level official.
So as a kid, he was first of all a baseball player, and he was a really good baseball player, has a really good swing and a really strong arm. He can still throw a hard ball close to 90 miles an hour, and he'll go out with his dog in the park and be doing different things, and there'll be kids out there doing something, and then ball gets away and he picks it up and throws it, and the kid's mouth just drops open as they look at it. At this guy's ability, and they'll go up and ask him, "Did you play pro?" So he was baseball, and in soccer, he was good straight ahead. He was, a pretty good athlete, pretty fast. But if you had him try to dribble through players, he didn't have ball control, and he was also a really good finisher. So he was the kind of forward that if a ball comes loose up near the front and Joe could get to it, there was a good chance that would be in the back of the net. But if you said, "I'm going to get the ball to Joe and Joe will create something and score," not so much. So, as you said, he was good, but he wasn't great. And he certainly wasn't national team caliber ever as a soccer player. But he took a referee class when he was 12. And he was a good referee right from the beginning. Because he has high self-esteem, and he also doesn't worry very much about what people think about him. And so when parents would be screaming at him, he would come off the field and we'd say, "Are you okay?" And he would go, "What? I just laugh about parents yelling at me like that." And he really meant it. It wasn't a cover-up for, wanting to be accepted, but having these parents yell at him. So he was very good at that. And he did referee. He quickly moved up to state level and he did refereeing all through high school. And then, as you said, he went to college. For 2 years, he was on the rowing team, and we couldn't believe that he was getting up at 5 in the morning and doing all that challenging rowing.
Crazy.
Then he decided, "I'll be a cyclist, maybe do some triathlons." And so in cycling, you're out riding for 5 hours and you're riding 120 miles and doing all this climbing in the hills. And he's very good at that. So needless to say, a very high fitness level. And when he graduated from college, his dream was to ride in the Tour de France, but he really started too late to get good enough at cycling to do that, even though he moved up very quickly from a
He had
Cat 1.
sponsors and everything, right? I mean, he was.
He was on a sponsored team where at least you got a jersey and you got a free bike. And he moved up very quickly from Cat 5 to Cat 1 as a cyclist. But we said, "You got to get back to refereeing as well. If we're going to help you out by having you live at home as you try to, make this dream happen." And so he got back to refereeing and then very quickly became identified as one of those referees that had a potential future. And it took some luck. There were definitely a couple of places. There was one guy in the soccer refereeing hierarchy that just didn't think Joe was any good. There were other people that liked him. He got a couple of breaks in a couple of places and worked his way up to refereeing USL games, and then was initially in the lowest of the three possible groups you could be when they set up sort of a identification program for future pro referees. But they had an empty tier one, then they had a tier two, which Joe wasn't in, and then a tier three, which he was. By the end of the season, when they wanted to populate tier one with just seven refs, Joe had jumped from three to one, and they told him, "You're the number one guy in tier one." And so he got his first break to get into MLS. And since that time, he's continued to do well. It took him a few years, but he got identified to get his FIFA badge. He's had that now for, I want to say, 3 years or 4 years. CONCACAF really likes the work that he's been doing. He did Gold Cup games this summer. He just did a World Cup qualifier between Haiti and Costa Rica down in Curaçao. He came back home, and a couple of days later, he was back down to San Antonio to do a friendly between Mexico and Paraguay, which turned out to be anything but friendly. But it was a very, challenging big game in a stadium full of people. And yes, he's got a chance to be a World Cup referee next summer. It's still a long shot, but CONCACAF likes him and would really like him to be taken by FIFA. There's one ref for sure ahead of him, Torry Pinto. There's another ref that did really well in the last World Cup, Ismael. And so those two are probably ahead of Joe, although Ismael has had some medical issues and is working on regaining his fitness. So a number of those kinds of things play into it. And then it's always the case of what will FIFA want? Will they want two teams from the US, or is three even possible? Because we're hosting it, and Mexico will have some crews, and Canada will have some crews. So it's a funnel, and Joe really has no idea at this point. All he can do is what players do. Keep working hard, do the best you can every game, and wait and see what happens. So he is definitely working really hard at doing stuff. And as we talked about earlier, he approaches this in a completely different way from that casual way that he transitioned from baseball to soccer when he was a kid. He is meticulous in his training. He's meticulous in his preparation. Every game he does is videoed. Every play is evaluated. Every call he makes is evaluated. And he lives up to, that scrutiny and dealing with that spotlight that referees are under when they do these big matches.
Yeah, just wild to me. I don't know how many families have two kids that have made it to the highest level of the soccer profession, although it's one playing and one refereeing. But I don't think people understand how I made it to state level referee. It was the highest level I ever made it to, and was doing, just high level, just high school playoff games and stuff like that before I got into coaching. And it's hard. It's competitive. It's brutal, how competitive it is. And I remember, going to association meetings and, talking about who's getting the better assignments of the better games. I can only imagine at the FIFA badge level how competitive it is. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, exactly. FIFA is famous for if you go out and you make a mistake, you're sent home. And so there's that pressure that is sort of in the background all the time. And Joe has always been one from a younger age. If you talk to him, he'd go, "I don't feel pressure." And now sometimes he does feel a little bit of that pressure because he knows just how critical these decisions are. And as he said, it's all about you're this close. You're at least in the discussion for the possibility of being included in the World Cup next year. And so you're close. And you think, if I miss this, people would assume, oh, well, so you got that close, you missed it. 4 years from now, you'll definitely get it. There's no guarantee of that, just like with a player. If you're in the World Cup, and you're 31 and you think, I'll still be playing well at 35. You don't know when that calf injury is going to happen that then you never quite fully recover from. And all of a sudden, you're never at the same form that you were before. And so the same thing happens to referees that, Joe's young enough that he's only just past his mid-30s. That you would go, he's got at least one more time after this that he could make it to the World Cup. But that means 4 more years of doing a great job in MLS, of doing a great job for CONCACAF, of having people talk about you and go, this guy should be in the World Cup, and then all the right things falling into place to get there. So, it would be a disappointment for him not to get there. But he literally has no idea, and he has no control over it, and there's no guarantees about anything. Like I said, other than Tori, who's pretty much certain to be in there because she's so highly regarded, having done the Women's World Cup final in the last World Cup and having crossed over and doing a very solid job refereeing men's matches. Other than her spot, everything else is closely held decisions that FIFA
Right.
makes. And Joe knows he just has to keep working really hard.
Does MLS treat goalkeepers well? I mean, does they treat referees well? Can they actually make a living just refereeing?
Yes, they can. And it's the you're not going to get rich being a referee. Joe could certainly make more money going into investment banking or something like that. But you can now make a living at it. It used to be maybe 10 years ago, they were all part-time. And so you would meet a referee and you'd say, "What do you do?" And he would say, "I'm a high school physics professor." And then on the
Right.
weekend, I fly to a site and I referee a game. Now the center referees, I believe all of them have a full-time salary. And so in the last contract negotiation that they did, they have a full-time salary and a commitment to a certain number of games that they have to do. And when they fulfill that commitment, then if they're doing more games beyond that, they're getting significant game fees. When they get into the playoffs, they're getting additional game fees. And the farther you go, the higher those game fees get. So they're like nice bonuses at the end of the
Yeah.
season. The contract, because you get a fixed salary and a certain number of games that you have to work, the new contract no longer penalizes those referees like Joe, who get pulled away from MLS to work CONCACAF games.
Right.
Because in the past, if you were getting a sort of a base salary and game fees, the more games you could work in MLS, the more money you could make.
Right.
Now, if he misses a month because he did the Gold Cup, and then he misses a month like he went down and did the U20 World Cup in Chile, working for FIFA down there. And so FIFA's paying him, but he's missing a month's worth of games in MLS when he would have been getting game fees. He doesn't get penalized now. If he works fewer than the number of games that they wanted him to
Got it.
work, he still gets his salary. And so that works out well for the referees that have their FIFA badge and that do get pulled off to do this tournament or that tournament, either for CONCACAF or for FIFA. So yes, referees can make a living now. It's not they're not making a killing, but they're definitely compensated enough that they can live.
And I tell you what, I encourage young coaches to do it, but I also encourage young players to do it. But I think it's my own kid did it, refereed at 12, 13, 14. A, you can pick up a few bucks, kind of nice. But B, I think it makes you a better player, and it definitely made me a better coach.
Oh,
Without a doubt, it made me better.
I totally agree with that. And Joe's coaches of the team that he was on in West Valley, in the West Valley Soccer League at the time, were big proponents of that. And they told all these 12-year-olds on their team, "You must take the referee class and get your badge." It was like mandatory. And so the whole team had to take the class. And then a number of them started refereeing, and some would quickly dropped out because of the pressure from the parents, but others kept going like Joe did. And their belief was exactly what you said, is that if you become a referee, you will be a better soccer player because you know the game so much better. And so I agree the same way. I took the class at the same time as he did, and it made me a better soccer parent and a better soccer manager because I would be standing quietly on the sideline and there would be all on the field and there would be outrage from the parents and I would go, "Nope, that's the right call. The referee got that." So yeah, you just understand the game that much better when you become a referee.
Well, as we wrap this up, Francis, are there any words of wisdom that you want to pass on to younger parents of kids that are going through this process of they want to play in college? It's kind of sad to me. I don't Kind of breaks my heart a little bit that it feels like there's a good percentage of players and parents where the only reason they're even playing youth soccer is so they can get a college scholarship. And, instead of just playing for the love of the game. But what do you, are there any a point or two or that you want to pass on to parents from your perspective, having been through this?
Well, I think the only thing I would share, and I suspect that you and I have are of the same opinion about this, is that, I mean, A, play soccer because it's a great game and because it's fun. If I could get into a time machine and go back and be a young parent again with Joe and Lindsay as young kids and go back through that whole process again, I would absolutely do it. I know there are some parents who go, "Oh, I'm glad that's over and I never have to do that again." And so those might be the same parents that were pushing their kids, and the kids didn't live up to expectations, and so they hated the tournaments, and it took them away from their parties or their trips to Europe or whatever else that they wanted to do. But for us, it was family time. It was, oh, Lindsay's got a tournament down in Las Vegas. We're all going to go down there, and we'll go to the games, and then we'll have some of those buffets in the hotels and go to a show and, all that kind of stuff. So for us, it was great. So first of all, emphasize that they should be doing it for fun and they should, really do it because it can be good for families. It's great for kids to learn the game and play the game. And then as the manager on our daughter's soccer team, we had kids of all different varieties. We had a couple of kids on there that were, I want to say, I almost said pretty close to Lindsay's ability. We didn't have any other national team players, but we did have kids that were very, very good. And those kids, when they picked the right college, went to college, and they became star players at that college. In fact, whereas Lindsay didn't, because one other goalkeeper came in who was a little bit better than her, and the coach only played one goalkeeper, so she didn't get to play. But what I used to tell those parents as we were getting into the college process is pick a college your daughter really wants to go to outside of sports, and also think about if she is planning to try to play in college, that the program fits her abilities. And I'm sure that's what you're talking to kids. I know from seeing your posts that you talk to parents and kids about that all the time. Because, if you go, I'm pretty good, so I want to go to Stanford because they're the best team, and you're the 28th player on that team, you're going to be the player that comes in when they beat BYU yesterday and 6-0. And plays the last 4 minutes of the game. And the question is, are you happy with that? And some players might say they are. Our son, when he played in high school, was on, they won the team that won the CCS championship. But Joe would tell you, I would not trade that for the world. I would not rather go to the local school that I could have gone to, where I would have been a starter, and give up the chance to play as part of that great team. And as you said, to contribute to the success of that team. So you have to have a heart to heart and really think it through. Am I going to be okay? If I can get into Stanford and be part of that team, will I be okay only playing 4 minutes? Or do I still think that somehow magically when I get there, I'm going to become the starter and I'm going to start every game over my 4 years? Otherwise, it might be better to go to some other team, to go to Cal, to go to Oregon, to go to some other team at a school that you love and play. And so that's the balance, because obviously, when you've played as much as players that go on to play in college have played, playing becomes part of who you are. And so if you want to go to college and make soccer part of your college experience, you've got to pick the right college so that you go there and you get to play.
I love that. That is just it's just so spot on, and it's two things I really want to re-emphasize again that you said. One of them is got to know your ability, because it's great to say I can get into Stanford, I can get into Notre Dame, I can get into even Oregon State, or people kid parents will look at they'll look at the Division One rankings and they'll go, oh well, the team that's at number 200 and something, maybe it's Fordham or something like that. They can't be very good. They got to need help, as if those teams want players that aren't going to help them, because
Right.
oh well, we can't get anybody better. Yes, they can, and you have to know your ability if you want to play, if that's part of it. Because the one thing I'll say is, I'm a little rude in this when I say this. Sometimes it comes across wrong, but I don't know how else to say it. But this isn't a Disney movie. You can't have everything that you want in life. Nothing's ever going to be perfect. Look, Lindsay wanted to be at Stanford. Great, you got to go to Stanford. You want a Stanford education? You got it. You want a scholarship? You got it. Now you don't get to play. So
Yeah.
you're going to have to, so many times, you're going to have to give up something. That you
Yeah.
can't have everything. So I know the schools that are on the sweatshirt names that you see at Target or, the big stores, or you see them on television because of football, maybe it's Texas or something like that.
Right.
But look, Texas was like 5-12 this year. They
Right.
struggled, and now the coach is gone. And the new coach could come in and say, you're all cut. I want you all gone. We don't know. Things can change. So I just love that you emphasize that you've got to be A, where you're going to be happy being at the school, but B has to be at your ability. And to find that match and making those two mesh is not easy. That's why I do what I do.
Yep.
And you've got to find that right fit. That's such great advice. And I hope parents will listen to that, take it to heart, and have a discussion. And the other thing you said is you have to know who you are. I think it's Shakespeare that said, know thyself.
Yep.
And in two words, that is such a big, huge statement. And I think a lot of kids, especially in the day and age of social media, Francis, it's, they like the likes, and they like the shares, and they like to see their name in lights on that phone, on that app, on Instagram. And it's exciting, and it's exciting when you get 50,000 likes because you're said you're committed to wherever, but it doesn't mean that that's the right fit for you. You have to
Right.
know who you are as a person. Yeah, I've got a story. I got a friend of mine that I took my B license with, I think, and he went to Virginia when Bruce Arena was there, and they were winning multiple national championships, and when it seemed like half the US national team was from Virginia, and they were unbelievably good. He didn't get to play any at all, like I don't think ever, maybe a couple of minutes. And I said, would you do it differently? And he said, no, I got to play with the best players in the world, or in the US, and I got to play and be with them and help them win. It was kind of the Lindsay attitude, is I'm not going anywhere. I like it here. It's not like I don't like it. I love
Right.
it. And yes, I wish I had played more, but so many players can't do that nowadays.
Right.
It's they got to have that instant success and that instant gratification. And if it's not happening, then I'll move on. I know players that have made, four transfers in 4 years,
Yeah.
because they're never happy. The grass is always greener on the other side, and then they can't find happiness. And I think it comes back to what you said. You have to know who you are and what makes you happy, and chase that. Don't chase the externally motivating factors.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that, as you said, if you ask Lindsay, were you terribly disappointed about not playing at Stanford? She would absolutely agree with you. If you ask Lindsay, were you terribly disappointed that you made the decision to go to Stanford? She would say, absolutely not. Because in the end, she developed friendships. She has relationships that she'll keep for life. And even something as little as when you apply to med school, they often, at least all the applications that she shared with me, as she applied to 18 or 19 med schools, I think, which is kind of the common way they do it today. Every single one of them said, tell us about a time you failed and what you did about that. And Lindsay's right up in
Well,
that.
that's
Every
easy.
single time was, yeah, exactly. I got to Stanford. I expected to play all the time there, and I wasn't able to do it. And here's how I dealt with that situation. So, as you say, it's a preparation for life, and you do have to know, will I be okay going to Virginia and never playing, but playing with all these great players? Lindsay stopping shots from Kelly O'Hara and Kristen Press and everybody else, and being with this great group of nine other women that were recruited in there. That was enough for her to say, I'm glad I did this, even though she will never be happy that she didn't get a chance to play more at Stanford. So it's that balance. And as you said, if the person that you're talking to says, no, if I don't play, it's the end of the world, then it's like, well, then you got to find a college where you know you've got a really good chance to play.
I love it. Thank you, Francis. Man, when we were talking at the wedding, I thought, oh, what a good episode this would be for parents. And you did not disappoint, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, fantastic. And when you get a chance, bug Lindsay and say, see if you can give pull aside an hour for Dawn. I know she's extremely busy. The life of a young doctor is insane. And then being a young married doctor and man, what a wild life.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'll talk to her and I'll tell her about this.
Thanks, brother. And I wouldn't mind talking to Joe either if he's got time, and we can tell his story. We can make this a three-part podcast. But he's an amazing young man too. Well, thanks again, Francis. Say hi to Lynn for me.
Thank you, Don. I certainly will. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Talk to you
Okay.
soon.
Thanks. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Francis Dickerson. Man, what a great story. Good. So many lessons for parents in there and for players too. Sometimes our kids just aren't ready to go straight into college coming out of high school. Maybe they're not physically ready. That happens a lot on the boys' side, but maybe they're not emotionally ready, and maybe they just want to explore the world. If you've got a kid that wants to play in college, but maybe just isn't ready to make the jump yet, might want to consider a gap year. We've got a program for players called gapyearsoccer.com. So if you go to gapyearsoccer.com, you'll see that we have opportunities in Europe, in Spain specifically, in Germany, in England, for players to spend some time playing soccer, maturing mentally, physically, emotionally, and preparing themselves to play in college. We're hearing more and more that college coaches are looking for players that are ready to go, can make an immediate impact with their program. So if you've got one of those players, go to gapyearsoccer.com. You can fill out an application, and one of our senior staff would be happy to get you on the phone, explain how a gap year works. It doesn't use up any eligibility for a player at all, so your player can play 5 years and sometimes even 6 years past high school years if that's what they want to do. So go to gapyearsoccer.com, fill out an application, one of our staff will be in touch. Thank you.